Thanks, everybody, for being here this morning. Building on the plenary program we just had, we've got, I think, a very exciting panel discussion. Wonderful folks up here on the stage and in the audience. If I can take the prerogative to recognize one person, it is always a special honor to have Governor Florio join us at these forums. Governor, thank you for being here. I'm Tom Wright, president of Regional Plan Association, if I didn't see you before. I'm not going to be on the panel, but what I'm going to do is just try to lay out in the next 5-10 minutes some of the ways that RPA is thinking about this issue of crossing the Hudson River, and then turn it over. Whoops, we've got a little feedback here. Thank you. And then I'll turn it over to Paul and these terrific panelists. I think, folks, I know that it's a knowledgeable crowd, but I think that kind of setting the groundwork for this conversation is really very important. So let me just talk about a few things, a little bit about the way RPA kind of sees the region and the world in the Hudson River. When I was growing up in the 1970s and the 1980s, even into the 90s, it was a suburban economy and a suburban world that we lived in. From 1975 to 2000, 9 out of 10 new jobs created in the entire 31-county region that RPA looks at, from Trenton to New Haven, Long Island, the Hudson Valley. Over that 25-year period, 90% of the job growth was outside the 5 boroughs of New York City. It was really in northern New Jersey, but also Fairfield County, Westchester, and other places. That's where the jobs were. Over the last 10, 15 years, that dynamic didn't just... New York City didn't just catch up with the rest of the region. New York is now far surpassing it. This chart shows, going back to 2003, the percentage employment growth in the different parts of the region. And what you see is while New York City had a kind of slight downtick during the so-called Great Recession, it's really been off to the races since then. I think I read just last week in Spotlight that New Jersey now has the same number of jobs that it had just before the Great Recession hit. And so New York City is today the great job incubator, the great economic powerhouse of the region. But to have that continue and succeed, the city has to have access to the workforce of the entire metropolitan region. It's not going to be able to rely just on the 8.5 million people living in the city for that workforce. New York's great advantage, of course, is access to a much wider, more knowledgeable workforce. And when you think about, this is a pretty dramatic graph. This shows historic growth in commuting patterns. It says trans-Hudson travel, but this is the number of net new commuters coming into New York City from the different subregions from 1990 to 2010, over a 20-year period of time, during which New York City has started that transition and started that growth. Long Island, virtually no change. There are literally the same number of people living on Long Island and working in New York City today that there were a generation ago. Connecticut, 5,000-person increase. In fact, the greatest growth in Connecticut is probably reverse commuters, people, young people living in the city and commuting out to Stamford or Greenwich. The Hudson Valley, 8,000 new, and New Jersey, over 65,000 people on a daily basis commuting into New York City. This is a symbiotic relationship. For New Jersey, the most important, fastest-growing industry is called commuting to New York City. And for New York, if it didn't have access to that workforce from New Jersey, it would not be seeing the kind of growth that it is today. Both sides of the river benefit from this. Looking forward, and as we do this 25-year plan, we've started to create our own projections, and they're aspirational, about what could the future look like in the next 25 years if we have the capacity to handle the growth that we think would occur. And the numbers we're coming up with right now is that over the next 25 years, we could see an even larger growth in New Jersey commuters, an additional 75,000 people wanting to commute from New Jersey across the Hudson River to jobs in Manhattan. I think we all know that with the existing system that we have today, that is impossible. There is no capacity in the system to get those people in today. And guess what? Actually, the fastest growing parts of New York City are not Manhattan. It's Brooklyn and Queens, where even more job growth is going. And we looked at these numbers, and then we thought, what would this look like if you extended it out to the entire 5 boroughs? And the result was over 110,000 people could be coming from New Jersey to New York. Now, here's a little-known fact that my researchers figured out. You can't get from New Jersey to Brooklyn without crossing the Hudson River. It turns out. So, we have a real challenge ahead of us. And solving this challenge, I think, is the topic for this panel and these folks to figure out today. Now, let's just dig into it a little bit more. Where do people come from outside the region, and how do they do this? This was a wonderful graphic that the Port Authority had produced by their consultants that shows kind of where people live, how they commute into New York City by different mode. And what you see, of course, is that especially from west of the Hudson River, it's not all just the blue of that dark rail, the way you have in Fairfield County or out in Nassau County. While the Long Island Railroad and Metro North are really cleaning up in Westchester, Fairfield, Nassau, in New Jersey, it's a much more complicated picture. We have railroad riders where New Jersey Transit has its great service, Midtown Direct or the Northeast Corridor, but also bus, ferry, of course, car are all part of the picture. It's a very complicated picture. And in particular, when you kind of look at crossings, and this is the way that the people get across, and you get this sense as you look at this that it's not, while we've talked a lot this morning about Penn Station and the Northeast Corridor, and of course we do have a healthy obsession with Gateway, but that alone is not the solution, and that looking at the bus ridership and the path system and the other pieces of it is going to be very important too. Another piece, just to kind of build on top of this when you think about, is that the Port Authority bus terminal, as I think everybody knows, is an outdated, outmoded, overcapacity system. So replacing this has got to be part of the top of the region's investment agenda. But figuring out how, where, as Scott talked about, the technology for buses is changing. So there are a lot of open questions still about how we can do this. The other thing we just kind of noticed is if you want to look at the reliance on buses in general across the region, there are roughly 1,000 buses coming across the East River from Brooklyn and Queens, just over 500 from above 60th Street, and New Jersey over 7,000. So we are... 24 hours. Sorry?
Is that peak or 24?
I believe that's a 24 hours, but I will look to Jackson in the front row to give me the nod. He did. It's a 24-hour number, Roger. But what you kind of see from this is that New Jersey is much more reliant on buses than the other parts of the region for commuting to New York City. Now, the Port Authority has been going through a planning process to try to figure out how to address this. And one of the first things they did was kind of hold a competition inviting some teams to look at the issue and to come up with some innovative proposals. It was the idea, I think, to kind of try to figure out what options are out there. And it was interesting to us just to kind of look at, these are the footprints of the different proposals that were proposed. None of these is kind of exactly the way they're going forward, but you could see that while some of them looked at the existing footprint on 8th Avenue, and trying to rebuild on site. Of course, the idea of trying to rebuild while the operation is undergoing, it presents some very extreme complications. Several of them, for that reason, looked to a site to the south and the west, which could connect into the Hudson River, the Lincoln Tunnels, and kind of looked at options there. You'd have opportunities with phasing, but what you're doing is essentially bringing people further away from transit, further away from where they want to be. It would be a very expensive project that would really kind of leave people maybe slightly worse off. There was one very innovative proposal that we're very interested in at RPA from a team of Perkins Eastman and AirUp, which actually proposed using the basement, essentially, the ground floor of the Javits Convention Center, and trying to tap directly into the Lincoln Tunnels from there. The Lincoln Tunnels run under the Javits Center, and you would move the bus facility there. Now, of course, there's a concern in that this is further west and south, again, from where people want to go, but it does have the benefit of a very good connection to that 7 extension. On the same time, one subway line relying on that raises kind of concerns too. So it was a very innovative proposal that we found quite provocative and maybe needs to be part of the mix of this. I throw these out here not to kind of say that there's, in many ways to say, there's no easy solution. Each of these proposals kind of has some opportunities, but also has some drawbacks. And I think that kind of thinking about what might be the best elements of each of them and trying to come up with a new plan is really going to be, I think, one of the great challenges. But I would say, again, from our perspective, the basement of the Javits and the opportunity to kind of use the connection to the Lincoln Tunnels is something that we're very interested in seeing whether that isn't perhaps part of any future solution here. Let's switch over to the rail sides. The Northeast Corridor, as many folks know, and some people experienced this morning, the tunnels are over 100 years old. They move slightly each day with the tides. They flooded during Superstorm Sandy, and as I mentioned earlier this morning, have really been, and we're starting to see, I think, the effects of both the overuse and the peak capacity of those tunnels and their deteriorating conditions. It's the linchpin of the entire regional rail network in the region and, in fact, and indeed the entire Northeast. And as we've talked about, and we just keep coming back to this graphic, losing one of the two tracks does not mean we would lose 50% of the capacity because the trains have to run in both directions. And so if one of the tracks has to go out for an extended period of time, which will happen, we will see a 75%, we estimate, reduction in capacity. And this becomes a real gut blow to the economy of the city and the entire region. So, thank God, the Gateway project has been coming forward and moving ahead. Gateway should be thought of not just as tunnels under the Hudson River, but indeed it's a project that starts in downtown Newark, includes new tunnels and bridges all the way across New Jersey, under the Hudson River, extending to 7th Avenue. One of the things we're considering at RPA is whether it shouldn't stop at 7th Avenue, but actually go all the way out to Sunnyside, Queens. Because if Gateway was designed and built as a through-running operation, you could get even more capacity out of it. I guess that is RPA's special role. People are concerned about the cost of Gateway as it is today, and of course we're just trying to make it bigger. Thank you, Rit, for this morning reminding people that some of our dead-on-arrival ideas have legs, after all. But this is, I think, kind of moving this project forward, and it is both a kind of grand vision and a series of discrete interventions that John Picari and others, I'm sure, will talk about in a moment. But just to kind of close this out and think about this, all of this is talking about massive infrastructure in a neighborhood that already has a great deal of it, but is going to be even more stressed. And so I'm pleased to have my friend, board member and colleague, Vishan Chakrabarty here. Vishan has put together some proposals about this idea that RPA, another of our crazy ideas, which is that someday we believe that moving Madison Square Garden to open up Penn Station is going to be necessary because doubling the capacity into that the station, bringing more people in and expecting them to still get in and out of the existing station is just ridiculous. And so Vishan, this is this incredible proposal he came up with, and the brilliance was that instead of trying to, one of the problems we always had was that if you moved the garden, what would you replace it with? And Vishan said, well, actually, if you took the superstructure and kind of left it there, but opened the whole thing up, clad it in glass, had it open around, I'll let him talk more about this in a moment, you would create the kind of real world-class institution and destination that New York and the region really deserves and needs. And as a daily commuter from New Jersey every single day, I wish I had something like this. But Vishan also was involved in rezoning the entire West Side, so we wanted him to talk not just about this brilliant proposal he has, but also about where are people going to go? Because when we talk about building a new bus terminal somewhere in this area, when we talk about doubling capacity under the Hudson River, when we talk about the new growth and the additional 75,000 New Jerseyans coming in, plus even Penn Access coming down, New York wants to bring Metro North directly to Penn Station. We have to be thinking, of course, of how people get in and out of the station and what kind of community we're creating. So, with that very simple layout and all those kind of easy pieces, I'm going to take a seat and turn it over to Paul Josephson and this distinguished panel to talk about these issues. Thank you very, very much.
So thank you, Tom, and good morning, everybody. It's an honor to be here, and really to be the surrogate for, I see a lot of friends and a lot of colleagues at our audience today. I think many of you could probably be up here on this panel as well. We've got some very distinguished folks in the audience. I thank you all for coming. It's great to see this kind of turnout. Obviously, kind of a day doesn't go by that you're not reminded of the challenges that we have in crossing the Hudson throughout the region and the ripple impact. It's not simply getting into New York. It's what happens on the back end throughout the state of New Jersey and elsewhere as a result when these tunnels go down. My job today is to try to be your surrogate in the audience. I'm fortunate enough to have five folks here who are really, truly experts. These are the folks you're reading. You know, you see them on a virtually daily basis talking about aspects of these issues, and we're really fortunate to have all five of them here. They don't need extended introductions, so I'm going to try to jump right into things. You see their titles up there. Their bios are in the brochure, so I'll leave it to your reading there. And we'll try to jump into things. If we look at, and obviously there's already been several analogies in the morning session, but if we look at the New York City region, and the city here is the heart of the tri-state region, and the residents of the three states in the tri-state region as a lifeblood of this region, folks need to get around this region, they need to get around the whole body in order to survive and for them to prosper and for the region to prosper. Tom just showed us that this region's heart has massive blockages in need of immediate attention. He showed you the numbers, I won't repeat them, but one of the things I would worth emphasizing is just the change in for those of us who were like me, 50, 60 years old, we started working in the city or we started working in the region in 1980, 1990, just the change in traffic and volume and the sources is a really interesting statistic. In 1980, there were roughly 220,000 cars and trucks that passed through the Port Authority facilities on a weekday. Today, that number is 239,000. I should say not today. Statistics I'm working off of are from 2013, but close enough. Essentially stacked. The number of folks traveling in via rail has jumped from 48,000 in 1980 to 173,000 in 2013. The number coming in by bus from 180,000 to 384,000. These are massive, massive increases in volume of folks coming in across the river, and that's exactly what's stressing our facilities. We're fortunate today. Our panelists are some of the region's top transportation and infrastructure doctors. They're really the kind of cardiac specialists. And we're going to try to dive in with them and use the time that we have to explore some of these issues and in particular their interrelationship, because so often we get fixated. We get fixated on, okay, there was a problem with, and I'm not going to blame Amtrak or New Jersey Transit, there was a problem with the rails today. What was the impact of that? Oh, there was a problem with the Lincoln Tunnel and therefore the buses all got backed up. Well, And we kind of just turn to what that immediate issue was rather than looking at the region and the crossing issue as a whole. And that's what we're going to try to do today and try to get a little bit more nuance to the discussion and think about in a holistic sense how we are approaching the various projects that we read about in the newspaper on a daily basis. To help us get started, I want to first ask Senator Bob Gordon. Senator, you're a dear friend, you're a great expert in transportation, you're a Bergen County resident, you're a former mayor of Fairlawn. You certainly understand the plight of the commuter, whether they go by rail or by bus. Your day job with the New Jersey State Senate is legislative oversight of projects like the bus terminal and like the Gateway Project. Set the stage for us. What have we learned from the recent derailments and the train that is stuck in the tunnel, and why are all of these projects critical to us?
Paul, first of all, I should say thank you for calling me an expert, but I became an expert about 3 years ago when I acquired the Legislative Oversight Committee, but I have been pretty immersed in the subject specifically Port Authority Bus Terminal and the condition of New Jersey Transit. If there was a clear message from the events of the last month, it is that the New Jersey transit systems are in a state of crisis. Senator Booker just said that this week. Two derailments, train stuck in the tunnel for 3 hours with 1,200 people. And what we're seeing is the result of the underfunding of our transportation systems. There's been a 90% reduction in the state subsidy for New Jersey Transit. Both Amtrak and New Jersey Transit have been underfunded, and I think it's going to take years to get these organizations back where they need to be. The cancellation of the ARC tunnel in 2010, I think, set us back 10 to 15 years from where we need to be. We are in a state of emergency, and I think we need to act accordingly. And, you know, and one thing that I keep talking about is the profound impact of transportation on the New Jersey economy and certainly the regional economy. Your numbers painted a very clear picture of that. Former DOT Commissioner Jack Letier said that transportation is the game board on which the economy is played. Our economic future as a state, and I believe as a region, depends on having a transportation system that works. And the one we have now clearly doesn't. The events of the last month, though, I think have taught us some lessons which can provide some guidance going forward. One, we've learned that the PATH system can play a role in expanding capacity as it is now. We saw a 20% increase in passengers on the PATH system. It wasn't particularly comfortable, but the system worked, and I think we need to make some investments in PATH to expand its role. I hope I'll have a chance to talk about that in a minute. I think we should note that PATH is in better condition than New Jersey Transit, in part because it can rely on a dedicated source of revenue, namely the tolls from the Port Authority. And so I think when we look at New Jersey Transit, we need to find a dedicated source of revenue to allow that organization to plan for the long term. It can't do that with annual appropriations. The second lesson I think that we learned from these events is that ferries can play a much bigger role. New York Waterways expanded its service to 39th Street. That took some of the pressure off. I'm hoping that policymakers in New Jersey will begin having conversations with the leadership of some of these ferry organizations to see what we can do there. The other message that I took from these events is that when a key hub in our system goes down, you just can't react with business as usual. Procurement policies, permitting, you need to treat the repair as an emergency. The process needs to be streamlined. People in the governor's office need to get on the phone to the key agencies and say, you know, make this happen, you know, get this done within a week. We can't go through the normal process. What we saw in the recent event, the commuters were trying to make their way around the debris and construction site in the Hoboken terminal. And, you know, that event occurred at September 29th. We should be much further along than we are. I was actually pleased to learn when I took an inspection tour on Monday with the Senate president of the Hoboken terminal that, in fact, all but one track will be fully operational by June, and that we've been hearing about construction being completed by the summer of 2019. In fact, that's to make it to restore the historical architectural elements and so on, but it'll be functioning as a transportation hub just in a matter of months. But we need to respond to these events in a very streamlined fashion. We also, I think, need to do a better job of emergency planning. I believe these events are going to happen with more frequency. That's what the engineers tell us will happen when you stop maintaining your infrastructure for 10 years. we need better processes for dealing with the public, as we saw at Penn Station, emergency plans, contingency plans, and as far as I know, those, if they've been developed, they certainly weren't implemented last week. Let me leave it there.
Great. Thank you, Bob. Let's jump to, I'm going to come back to bus terminals and path, but let's speak, and I put up the map, which I find this graphic just to be really the best explanation of what the challenge is that we have in front of us in terms of the many modes, nodes and modes that are coming in to Manhattan and the challenges. So I think it helps give us some context for the conversation here. I'd like to jump to John Pecari. John, you've been given the responsibility to kick off the Gateway Project. I know, I believe probably 2 years ago at this assembly, we were all talking about the need for the project. I don't think that the Gateway Program Corporation was up and running at that point. Shortly after that, I think we had that summer, we had a series of failures, not unlike what we've seen recently, that really spurred action and created the Gateway Program Development Corporation. It really spurred our region's elected leadership to come together and figure out some funding solutions. You've been given the Herculean task of getting a $20+ billion project off the ground. Can you speak to us about where we stand today with respect to the program? And in particular, I'm sure folks want to hear where we stand with respect to federal funding. That's obviously been a big issue in the newspaper lately.
Thanks, Paul, and good morning, everybody. Those are really fundamental questions, and I think we need to step back for a second and also realize what's at stake here. So picture, if you will, one of the financial centers of gravity for the planet, the cultural and economic engine for the nation and the world, that's also part of a highly interdependent region where literally the economy relies, as Tom pointed out, on the movement across the river and in every direction every day. And this is a region that represents about 10% of America's gross domestic product. And if you want to think about it this way, we have a single point of failure for 10% of America's GDP. That's kind of the mission statement for the Gateway program. And the single point of failure, by the way, was carrying passengers while the Titanic was under construction. This single point of failure was carrying passengers when Orville and Wilbur Wright switched from the Model A to the Model B Flyer, the first production airplane in the world. This single point of failure it represents a project whose warranty expired 105 years ago. Now, who would do that? And the answer is us. Our parents and grandparents, and in the case of the Gateway Project, our great-grandparents had the foresight and the economic fortitude to actually invest in the future of the region. So the Gateway Project is our opportunity to do the same thing. So think of the Gateway Project as essentially two phases. The first phase is redundancy and resiliency. The second phase is new capacity. And I know Vishan is going to talk about a larger vision and capacity, and that's very important. I want to make sure we focus on the here and now and what's at stake here. So we have a 106-year-old bridge and a 106-year-old two-tube tunnel that literally represent a single point of failure. And as Tom was alluding to earlier, I took Amtrak from Washington in this morning, and it was single tracking. And I wasn't sure I was going to actually make it on time for this. That is something that happens often. You all remember Hurricane Sandy, and I know you're going to hear from Vice President Biden at lunchtime, and I will tell you that in the immediate aftermath of Sandy, Vice President Biden was relentless in a nice, professional, but relentless way in making sure that those tunnels and all of the other infrastructure connections got up and running right away. But at the time, we didn't know if those tunnels could reopen. That should have been all the warning that we needed. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're truly in the twilight zone if we don't consider phase one of Gateway, the redundancy and resiliency part of it, to be the most urgent infrastructure project in America, bar none, period. And on the good news side of it, it's a bridge project and a tunnel project. The Portal North Bridge is 100% designed, 100% permitted. Pre-construction work will start in July of this year on the Portal North Bridge. The only thing that's waiting is the federal funding component of it. You have three agencies here in the region, New Jersey Transit, Amtrak, and the Port Authority, that work together extremely well to pony up the local funding part of it. And it's basically a 50-50 deal for local funding and federal. That local funding commitment is in place. We are ready to go to construction. This Port of North Bridge is not just shovel-ready, it's shovel-worthy. It should be the top priority in the country. So the bridge is ready to go as soon as we have the federal funding. Right behind it is the tunnel, which is in design right now. On a vastly accelerated basis, the environmental impact statement, the draft will be out in 60 days. So that will follow right behind. We are currently putting together the procurement and the financing plan for the tunnel. It will be ready to go as well. As important as the capacity projects are down the line, let's first make sure with the Gateway project that we don't have some catastrophic impact on the region's economy, which is a failure on a more than intermittent basis, which we have now, of a 106-year-old tunnel and bridge. So that's the Gateway project, phase one in a nutshell. Phase two is capacity expansion, Penn Station, and a lot of other elements in both New Jersey and New York that'll make it work. It's a total of about $24 billion. That is, while it's a large investment in regional GDP terms, it's not that large an infrastructure investment. And I would point out, this is not just a regionally significant, but it's a nationally significant project. So we're ready to go. Gateway, phase one, with the bridge, tunnel right behind it. We have a region that got its act together with the funding is just waiting for a federal partner. Thanks.
So John, the $24 billion, is that phase one, or does that include your estimates for phase two?
That's an estimate for everything. Phase one, phase two. There's a lot of other projects that I didn't mention that make up the Gateway program, like the Bergen Loop, which will give a one-seat ride for light rail riders on three different lines, the Sawtooth Bridges in New Jersey. Those are all part of subsequent phases. Again, with phase one, we're focusing on eliminating that single point of failure that puts not just the regions but the nation's economy in jeopardy.
John, one other question. This morning, Scott Recker, our chairman of RPA, spoke about the value and the virtues of P3 delivery systems. Can this project proceed can this project proceed without the federal funding component? Can P3 be a replacement for that?
Everyone should be clear on this. There is no scenario where the project can go forward without the federal funding. What we're talking about are different procurement methodologies. So the bridge, for example, I mentioned it was 100% designed and permitted. And so it's ready to go as a design, bid, build project. So it will be bid in a conventional way, and we have a high degree of reliability that project's ready to go. The tunnel part of it, we're looking at different options, and we're open to anyone. Public-private partnership would be one of them, but there's this kind of misnomer that public-private partnership means you don't have public money in it. What it means, first and foremost, is that you're allocating the risk in the project, the schedule and cost risk, the operating risk, and other parts of it in a different manner. It does not mean that it can go forward without public funding. Even with a public-private partnership that has some private funding, the federal share and the local share will be required. That is clearly understood at the local level. Nobody, quite frankly, should turn public-private partnerships into a kind of avoidance strategy where you don't have to talk about a local federal partnership for funding, because that's required no matter what methodology you use.
Thanks. Let me turn to Andrew Lynn. Andy, you have served, like most of the other panelists here, in many capacities here in the region. Currently as a director of planning and regional development for the Port Authority, but you've also served in the New York City Department of City Planning at a pretty senior level. We've all been reading about concerns and different visions, and Tom showed before a couple of different models or different locations for Port Authority bus terminal. Can you speak to, get us caught up on this saga? Where do we stand in the planning process, and like Gateway, do we have any drop-dead dates coming up in our future?
Thank you. I'll start with the last piece. There's an urgent need for a new bus terminal. What we have today is past its useful life, operating over capacity, does not deliver the quality of service that commuters and other bus users deserve. So there's a pressing need to do something as quickly as possible on it. And the most painful moment I've had when I go to New Jersey to hearings where we hear from commuters is when they turn to me and say, well, how long will it take to build a new terminal? And I give them a candid answer, and they're just stunned at how long that will take, given the realities of the world. So we have a pressing need to do this as quickly as we can. In terms of a drop-dead date, 15 years from now, 15 to 20 years, there is a need structurally to replace the entire bus terminal structure. That is a real drop-dead date. Over the years, had a number of meetings with the community board in Manhattan, in that area, about the bus terminal. They don't like any of the plans we've developed for a new terminal, by the way. But I like meeting with them in the terminal in this sort of dingy conference room, because when we meet, the whole building shakes from the buses moving through it, and I think it conveys the point, we have a structural issue here and we've got to address it. Just try to provoke a little anxiety on their part. So the Port Authority has been doing a lot of work for a number of years on the bus terminal. And there's just a fundamental tension. We need to develop a terminal that can meet the growing demand. It's going to go from 260,000 trips at the terminal today to 330,000, we think, in 2040. To give you a sense of what that means, Grand Central only has 220,000 rail trips a day. So we are talking about a very big facility. It's massive. It's sprawling, and to add to the problem, we need to keep the existing terminal open while we build this new terminal. It's just a bear. And so what's been driving most of the Port Authority's work has been this compelling transportation need, and I think that's appropriate. But obviously, when you have a big project in Midtown Manhattan, in an extremely dense and busy environment with people living there and working there, you've got to worry about all sorts of other things. You know, how does it relate to the street? How big is it? Is it covering streets? What impact is it having on that community? And representatives of that community, the electeds, the city agencies, the community boards, we've heard quite a bit from them. And they quite rightfully are very concerned about what we're doing and what effect it'll have on the places where they work and live. So the process we're going through is, how do we balance those competing and very important goals? And they are in conflict. And the simple reality is that if we do everything the community wants, we will not get the transportation infrastructure that the region needs. And if we do everything we want to do ideally from a transportation point of view, that is going to have some negatives for the community. And the question is, how do we strike that right balance? So we've been through many iterations with the various stakeholders. First, we developed a profile of the whole network, all the modes, New Jersey to New York City, to just give the context. Second, we did a master plan with five concepts that were sort of optimized from a transportation point of view. They were not popular with the community, the electeds, the city, our board. They were very expensive. They involved taking a private property. Some people thought we should put the bus facilities in New Jersey. Some people thought we should rely much more on rail and try to reduce the bus usage. And so after issuing those concepts, we did another bunch of work with developing ideas for New Jersey terminals. They didn't work very well. Looking at the 7-train extension to New Jersey, could that divert bus riders? It might divert 25% if it were ever built. Looking at sending buses to other locations, the George Washington Bridge. Looking at what technology could do to reduce it. Looking at moving the inner city buses to another location. Looking at what the Gateway Project in its full development might achieve. And all of those things can help diminish it. But relatively at the margins, that is to say, if you look at all of them, maybe it could be 20, 25% smaller than what we're talking about. After all that effort, our board was still not satisfied and decided to go out with the design competition, which was mentioned earlier. And this was an effort to get some really world-class engineers and architects to come up with better ideas for the terminal. And part of that effort was also to respond to criticism about taking private property and a suggestion, well, can't you put the terminal underground? Maybe that would have fewer impacts. And so we got five very interesting proposals. We've looked at them. We appreciate the very good work that went into them. They did not get a warm reception, certainly on the New York side of the river. A lot of criticism of them. So where are we now? We are pushing a reset button. We've got from our board a $3.5 billion amount in our capital program to advance the terminal. We are hiring a new team of consultants, engineers, architects, environmental specialists. We're going to inaugurate a NEPA environmental review process. We're going to do a massive stakeholder outreach effort that's going to be coordinated with that. And we're entering into this without any preferred option. We don't have a site. We don't have a design. We don't know for sure how big this thing will be. We don't have a schedule. We don't have a budget yet. But we're really starting over. But I don't mean to suggest that all the work that's been done is a waste. I think it'll be very useful. We've already had quite a bit of input, much of it very thoughtful, and we'll do the best we can and hope we strike the right balance.
So I know, Andy, you certainly sit in quite the hot seat on that issue. So I'm going to shift this question over to Senator Gordon. You are an elected official. Many of your constituents are the fannies and the seats on those buses coming over, but likewise, we've all been in the position of when a transportation facility or any sort of infrastructure of magnitude comes through backyards, residents get upset about it. Can you speak to your views on why this terminal needs to be expanded and thoughts on how we can, is there a win-win solution here? Is there a solution where that bus terminal can be something that's actually positive for the West Side?
Yeah, thank you. Well, I think some of the numbers we've seen speak to the critical importance of this project. About the five northern counties of New Jersey account for about 60% of the. Of the use of this terminal. The Blue Venix projections are suggested from the Port Authority are suggesting a 50% increase in ridership at the bus terminal. As we've just heard from Andy, it is not a positive experience now. It is at capacity. It really, using the Port Authority bus terminal really ruins your day. And as policymakers in New Jersey, we have to think about the long-term impact of New Jersey becoming known for just a terrible commute. New Jersey now has the longest commutes in the country. And I'm certainly hearing from constituents anecdotally about how their friends who are at the stage of their lives at which they're forming families and are thinking about, well, am I going to move from the city into the suburbs? Am I going to move to New Jersey or Westchester? And the quality of the commute has become a critical factor in that decision. And for businesses that are thinking about either expanding in New Jersey or locating there, the question arises, can we attract the talent that we need? Do we want to put our employees through the wear and tear of 3 hours of commuting a day? I am convinced that unless we invest in these critical pieces of infrastructure, the crossings across the Hudson and a new Port Authority bus terminal, the 300,000 jobs that the RPA is projecting in Manhattan are not going to be filled by New Jerseyans. They're going to be filled by people living in Westchester or somewhere else. So this is absolutely critical to the future of New Jersey's economy. Most people in those northern counties I referred to are not living near rail hubs, and so they need to rely on buses. Now, win-win, what kind of solution can we find that strikes the balance that Andy was referring to? I think there are some options that should be considered. One is, and I think that this would be a way to expedite the construction of a bus terminal and get it done within the current 10-year capital budget that was just approved, and that is to build up on the existing facility. Of course, would be contingent on the engineering and environmental reviews, but I am told by the people who build things for the Port Authority that technically it's a feasible thing to do. You keep the existing facility in operation, you build floors above it to achieve the 50% capacity gains that you need, and replace a parking lot with a ramp to gain access to that. The side benefits of that, you minimize the disruption to the west side, and I must tell you, as a former mayor and many of my colleagues have experience in local government, we are keenly sensitive to these local impacts and want to minimize the impact on the west side. There's also a benefit just in terms of transportation. You have several subway lines that are coming down 8th Avenue adjacent to the existing structure. And so those would remain accessible to the people using the existing facility, as opposed to something one block to the west or in some of the other locations that you saw. I think that is one way we can try to minimize the impact and achieve the capacity gains that we need.
And as you're talking, it's reminding me as I look at our map up here. I guess I'm perceived as a New Jersey guy because I serve the RPA in New Jersey capacity, though I did live in the city for about 7 or 8 years and have lived in Hudson County for many years as well. But hearing Andrew talk about what's going on with the West Side residents and their concerns, I'm looking at this map, and if you look at the Middlesex Monmouth Ocean area on that map down at the bottom, you see all those yellow dots. Those yellow dots are bus riders. Now, not too long ago, New Jersey Transit had been looking very long and hard at something called the MOM Project, Monmouth Ocean Middlesex, maybe it was Middlesex on Ocean Monmouth, but it was the MOM rail line. And all those yellow dots really wanted that MOM line, but the towns that it was going through did not want it. And that's an example, yet another example within our region of where the the need for and the possibility of changing modes that could do some of the things like Andrew was talking about. Can we shift some people over? Can we shift the families from bus into rail, get them out of the tunnel, get them out of the Lincoln Tunnel and into John's new tubes? It's a challenge on both sides of the river. And it would be, I think, wrong to, I'm sure nobody on this panel, but it would be wrong to criticize folks on the west side for their concerns about what their neighborhood's going to look like, just like folks on the New Jersey side of the river have the concern about what infrastructure will do to their neighborhood. Which brings me to Commissioner Trotman. You have the, aside from having a tremendous experience across the various levels of government, as you were describing in our earlier session this morning, you've served the U.S. DOT. Today, you're responsible for transportation here in New York City. You've got primary jurisdiction over the streets here in the city and a whole lot more, and the responsibility of handling all that foot traffic coming off of the rails and the bus facilities that those of us want to build. How and where, and I think Andy's kind of pointed out this, raised the point very well, how and where does your office come into this question with respect to the bus terminal?
Thanks, a good question. And I want to start by saying, well, Andy, thank you. I have to say I'm pretty excited by what you just said, that you're engaging in a reset, because I think I have to admit from the point of view of New York City, a reset is very welcome. And I guess I want to talk big picture, and then as you pointed out, I am responsible at a very granular level for roads and sidewalks and local impacts. And I want to say on a big level, and it's great to have Senator Gordon here, New York City recognizes what an absolutely fundamentally important project the bus terminal is and the larger question of trans-Hudson commuting. We recognize it's fundamental for the economic prosperity of our city, of this region. And one thing my Mayor de Blasio has talked about, he has tried to think regionally and has said, even though here in New York City we're trying to aggressively build housing as fast as we can, we're certainly always going to rely on our suburban neighbors, New Jersey, Long Island, Westchester, et cetera. So we recognize the fundamental importance of this project. But I will also confess that I think as the project has rolled out, and it's funny to be sitting here with my former USDOT colleague John Porcari, as we're talking about Gateway, $24 billion, and then as the Port Authority started to look at options for a bus terminal, $10, $12 billion. I think a lot of us in New York City said, once you're starting to talk $30, $40 billion, you're talking real money. And as we, even in this region, and as we look at those eye-popping numbers of the increased amount of commuters we're going to be anticipating, is the only solution a massive bus terminal, or do we need to think more holistically? And we looked at some of our global cities around the world. Global cities aren't building big bus terminals right now. They're going with rail because it is so much more efficient. Thank you. And I know why I want to sort of reassure New Jersey. I'm in no way saying we don't need a bus terminal, but I do think from where we sit, I hear you say, Senator, well, there are folks in New Jersey who there's just not rail there and they need to take the bus. But, I love that map because you look at Queens, which is very subway dependent. You have pretty comparable densities in Queens as you have in Hudson Bergen. So, I think the discussion of, as we look at the next 50 years in this region and we're spending tens and tens of billions, I think the point of view from New York has been, let's broaden the lens. And the solution, I think, we think just can't be one enormous bus terminal, that we need to look more holistically. And we recognize a lot of financial and political challenges go into this. But this is an important moment for us as a region to grapple with that. And I do think, I'm not sure I think that this is an irreconcilable conflict. I actually think if all sides work together, we might come up with a product that would benefit us all. I do also want to take a minute on the local impacts. And I appreciate what you said, Andy, and what the senator said. It's funny, in this discussion, as we talk about the bus terminal and the Titanic, billions of dollars and hundreds of thousands of people we need to move, it is a local neighborhood. And, back when the original bus terminal was built by Robert Moses, we didn't worry so much about those things. But today we do. And we worry very fundamentally about, can we create a facility that is efficient, that perhaps instead of being this hulking presence, can be inviting at the street level, can be well connected to our transit system, can minimize, all the things that, of course, we worry about, minimize disruptions, displacement, et cetera. And I do think, you know, you mentioned as an elected official, you're sensitive that I work for an elected official. He's sensitive to that, too. I had an interesting discussion with some of the New Jersey counterparts at one point, and we were discussing what, you know, could more facilities be in New Jersey, and one of them said, oh, well, my mayor would scream if we had more traffic in our town. And I'm thinking, well, what about my mayor? He's screaming, too, believe me. So, you know, I would sort of put it on a positive note. I think big picture and at the local impact level, you know, there is real possibilities here to come together on something that's not a zero-sum game where both sides, so to speak, of the river, but we're both sides of the river, but we're one region, could come up with something that would really benefit us all.
Commissioner, is there, you know, we have under, I guess it's actually put on your USDOT hat again, we have the notion of metropolitan planning organizations under the transportation funding laws. Do you have thoughts as to the vehicle for, and I think we heard a little bit in Ritz's speech before this panel, and this is all kind of coming together very nicely here, about the need for how do we plan regionally. Do you have thoughts, reactions to Ritz's comments?
Well, I thought Ritz gave a wonderful speech, and I agree with a lot of what he said. I mean, you know, we're being honest here. The Port Authority, he was speaking about, you know, how is that institution functioning at this time? Just remember, New York City, we don't even have a single representative on that board. There was a design competition. Not a single person from New York City was invited to participate or be a judge. So I guess I have to say, I don't know that we need complicated new structures, but certainly I think from the city's point of view, being a city of 8.5 million, taking in several million commuters every day, we're sort of, I think we're beyond the stakeholder. I think we should be a partner in this endeavor.
Thank you. So let me turn to the man to my right who's been quiet for the last hour or so, but I have a feeling he's not going to really want to let me start going. Deshaun has done some tremendous work in coming up with a really interesting and exciting vision for Penn Station, the possibilities of Penn Station. As was said earlier today, a lot of what the RPA is about imagining what the future can be, and sometimes folks, the proposals that come out of events like this, the work of the RPA, what we call dead on arrival when it's first put out there, but then we look, you know, those are the seeds that lead to the changes that ultimately consensus builds around. I guess about 6 months ago, you put forth a very intriguing proposal about reuse of the Madison Square Garden complex, and that's based on some really deep understanding of thought and responsibility in the past for activities across Manhattan from a land use side. If I'm not mistaken, you also had some responsibility with respect to the garden some time ago. Can you speak to us about how do we get past this these issues of what are we? I mean, the Penn Station. Yeah, how do we address Penn Station? How do we address the bus issues? Small little question.
Okay.
What's your thinking?
So, before we get into Penn, can we zoom out a second? Because as I listen to the frustrations of these four extraordinary public servants to my right, just contemplate the fact. You hear about all this stuff is so expensive and so impossible, and why can't we do any of these things? Just take New York City over the last decade. The Hudson Yards, World Trade Center, and Atlantic Yards are some of the most complex projects that have been built in the world. And this city figured out how to do them. And, you know, it seems like when it comes to the private stuff, we can figure this out. It's not that hard. There's enormous amount of public interaction in those projects. But somehow when it comes to the public stuff, everyone throws their hands up and says, well, it's impossible. That's nuts. It's totally nuts. Because if this city can figure out how to build what we're building out in Hudson Yards, we can certainly figure out how to solve the problems that all of these fine people are talking about. So I wouldn't accept, as a starting point, I wouldn't accept for a second that these things have to be thought of as impossible. So let's, moving out from that, clearly in the region, if you look at where New Jersey can grow, where Long Island can grow, it's really along the rail corridors. That's where the empty land is. And you hear a lot of local politicians talk about that. That's going to put more and more pressure on all of these facilities, on PATH, on the bus terminal, and especially Penn. I'm going to argue that Penn is still the center of the storm, however. Penn Station, just to give you the number, it's 650,000 passengers a day. That's three times more than Heathrow Airport. Think about Heathrow Airport. Think about the amount of space dedicated to passenger movement at Heathrow Airport. Right? Now think about Penn. Now, we heard John talked about phase one and phase two of Gateway. And phase two of Gateway includes what's known as Penn South, which is the Block 780, I believe, an additional seven tracks, right? Which brings Penn Station from 21 up to 28 tracks. And I'm all for it. And I think in terms of this bus terminal conversation, we should also, what Tom mentioned about Gateway being a truly through-running facility means that, you know, I think there's significant data that shows, and Tom will correct me if I'm wrong, that we can ease some of the pressure on the bus terminal by making a Penn Station that really works. And, you know, to Pauly's point, I think that is the way most global cities are going. And furthermore, our proposal for Penn got a unanimous approval from the community board because people don't hate the idea of a nice railway station in their neighborhood, maybe the way they might in terms of an enormous bus terminal. So I think even from a community perspective, we should think about it that way. But here's the thing. So as much as I believe in Gateway, and as much as I think all of us, or most of us in this room, believe in Gateway, it is unconscionable to think that we are going to pour more people into that station in its existing form. This is not an abstract architectural or urban question at this point. 16 people were hurt on April 15th. I walked around that station just the other day when it was not rush hour. You cannot find exit signs. On the lower level, which is where most commuters transfer from the commuter railways into the subways, that's where hundreds of thousands of people move every day, I can touch the ceiling. God forbid there's a smoke event. This isn't about fancy architecture, folks. This is basic public safety, right? And we, you know, so we're going to wait for what happened at King's Cross. So here's the basic thing, right? Of course Gateway should happen. Of course Phase 2 should happen. But we have to fix Penn along the way. Now, of course, we hear a lot about Farley. And Farley is a very good and very important project. It's a very important project for Amtrak. Amtrak's roughly about 7% of the 650,000 people who use the station every day, right? So you're talking about a $1.6 billion project in the Farley building that will serve a very important need, but will leave some 500,000 people a day under the bowels of Madison Square Garden in that same ceiling. And I don't think any of us should find that to be acceptable. Furthermore, from the New Jersey side, Farley does virtually nothing for New Jersey Transit. It does virtually nothing for where most of the growth is coming from, as Tom pointed out. So as important as Farley is, it is completely insufficient. So the basic idea here is that the Garden can move to the back of the Farley building. There were about $100 million spent on plans a decade ago to move the Garden to the back of the Farley building. And I know for a fact that under the right circumstances, the Garden would move to the back of the Farley building. That allows us to rethink the heart of the station, the center of the station, and by the way, where the phase two tracks for Gateway come in, they do not come in anywhere near Farley. They come in between 7th and 8th Avenue, directly south of Madison Square Garden. That's where we are pouring more people with a new garden hose, the Gateway, into the same rusty little bucket. And so the basic idea is once the Garden moves, rather than think of a new building from scratch, which is like doing open heart surgery on a patient while they're jogging, you know, 650,000 people a day, our basic proposal is to recycle the structure of the garden. There's a model sitting outside that can explain this. It can be done at fairly low cost and fairly low disruption given the scale of the project that we're talking about. But you can get, I mean, let's, again, I think architects sometimes have done this entire question a disservice. You know, because, oh, is it a bird? Is it this? Is it that? I mean, that's not what this is about. Right? That's not what this is about. To all due respect to my colleagues in my field, right? There is an efficient, cost-effective way to build a beautiful station, and let's put public dignity way down at the end of the list of what our basic priorities should be, right? But let's put public safety at least at the top for everyone in the region. So I think we do need a reset, not just on the Port Authority, but the Penn Station discussion. And I just want to say one last thing about this, which is the garden has, I think, 6.5, 7 years left on their special permit. A lot of people in this room fought hard to get that special permit limited. In that window, we can do all of this, right? What will keep it from happening, it's a very clear point, what will keep it from happening is if office space gets built in the back of the Farley Building, which is advancing right now as a plan, because that is the most logical place where the garden can move. I do believe the garden, and I have good evidence to back this, that the garden would move there. But if office space gets built back there to help fund Farley, and it's not going to help by a lot of money, right, then we are committing a cardinal sin, and we are asking for a disaster. And we could have prevented that disaster. So, and just to close, Tom asked me to talk about where people are going and not just the station. It's clear that the Penn Station area is the poor step cousin of Midtown. And as people say, well, imagine someone saying to you years ago, for the old-time New Yorkers in this room, that Bryant Park would be a world-class office address, that Columbus Circle would be a world-class office address. If we fix the Penn Station area, what it means is that that whole stretch of land, basically from the Nomad Hotel all the way out to the river, becomes an extraordinary new place that's incredibly important for New Jersey as it is for New York. And this is all doable because, as I said in the beginning, if we can build Hudson Yards in the World Trade Center site, we can do all of this too.
So we have about 15 minutes left before lunchtime, and I want to, at some peril, I guess, if we do have a large audience here, but I do want to open it up and invite any questions for our esteemed panel. Yes? Yes, please. Do we have a mic coming?
They've asked me to stand up, which is... My name's Alice LaBrie. I'm former U.S. Department of State Foreign Service. I live in Harlem. You can't hear me? Sorry. I'm not coherent here, but first of all, please leave it as Penn Station. That's number one. And number two, how would that work with the Madison Square Garden behind Farley? Would they lose their street view or, you know, would it be hidden back there?
The garden doesn't have much of a street view today. I think the garden would get...
That's not true. When you get off the train or when you walk on the street, there it is.
Yeah. And I don't know how positive an experience that is for most folks, to be truthful. There are other examples of arenas that have gone into landmark buildings. I think you could have a really beautiful execution of a new Madison Square Garden in the Farley Building, as well as an Amtrak station. Look, the Barclays Center is about the same distance from the transportation as we're talking about from Madison Square Garden. So I think it would be a great experience for patrons and fans and users. And that's important. But I would argue that the region's transportation network is even more important.
I don't know if we're at that point.
Well, this is, I think what you're referring to, ma'am, is that Moynihan Station is the name for the station in the Farley building. I don't think there's any plans to, I guess he is talking about renaming it Empire Station.
Cuomo Station, isn't it?
Thank you. Roger Hers, Time to Improve Municipal Efficiency. What would you like people attending? First of all, my optimism may not be totally irrational. What would you like me, others, to do to speed up or at least not see a slowdown of the process?
I'll jump in there for Gateway. Again, phase one and phase two are two separate things. Phase one needs to go forward right now. It is a rare project that is 100% ready to go, the bridge project, and the tunnel's right behind it. And we have the local commitment from the three agencies that I mentioned, Amtrak, New Jersey Transit, and the Port Authority. We just need the federal commitment. So if you're looking for a homework assignment, it's to make sure our federal partners stand up for first the Portal North Bridge and then the tunnel.
Yeah, with regard to the bus terminal, I would encourage the New Yorkers to promote a dialogue between New York officials and New Jersey officials. We had a working group organized and underway, and we hit something of a speed bump, I think, because of political issues. But certainly, on the New Jersey side, we would welcome an opportunity to continue conversations with community boards, New York officials, to try to find the balance that we that needs to occur.
Could you mention how we might help remove the speed bump?
Well, get in touch with your elected officials. I mean, that's the way it works on my side of the Hudson in New York. You know, we're ready to continue to resume the conversations.
Other questions? Yes.
John Henry, a freelance journalist. The attention has been appropriately focused on the movement of passengers, but the area is also facing a crisis in freight, which is expected to grow by about 37% by the year 2035. And right now, about 2% of freight moves into New York City by rail. And nationally, that figure is about 40%. So clearly, there's a crisis here as well. And a year ago, the RPA proposed studying the feasibility of using the new Hudson tubes, or to have them large enough to accommodate freight trains that would be used in the off-peak hours. And I'd like to ask Mr. Porcari how Amtrak feels about that.
I won't speak for Amtrak. I will say, as part of the Gateway Program Development Corporation, and specifically the environmental impact statement that's underway right now, for the tunnel, the draft again will be out in at the end of June, that we're looking at that as part of the EIS. So don't think traditional freight. If there is an opportunity through the redundancy of a new tunnel to move off-peak freight, it's more along the lines of air freight, low weight, high value. It would have to move within the existing confines of the passenger rail system, which is, by the way, not impossible. If remember, Farley is there as a building because that's where the mail came on the trains. So it is something that, as part of the EIS process, we're looking at. It is not going to address, and it never would address, the larger issue of heavy freight movement into New York. But if it were for the garment district is one example, off-peak air freight type movement, that could certainly theoretically happen if there's capacity off-peak.
Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. I'm Fred Ornstein, and the only reason I preface it, I used to be a member of the New York State Senate, and so I want to address my question to my valued colleague, the state senator from New Jersey. It seems to me that, and I understand from your point of view and from your constituents' point of view, the emphasis on bus travel. However, the underlying fact is that bus travel is the slowest, most outmoded travel you can think of. The answer, part of the answer here is what Ms. Trottenberg indicated, is to use rail. And I think that will require a very fundamental reexamination of some of the assumptions that you rightfully put forward on it. But emphasizing rail traffic, including high-speed rail, into some of the further regions of New Jersey, for instance, are part of the solution. I say to you, it is more expensive, it will take longer, but when we are in the middle of a fundamental restructuring of this whole region that we are involved in, those are solutions you have to look at.
Yeah, I don't disagree with the things that you're saying, and I didn't mean to exclude other modes. But the fact is, one, we know that, as we've heard, there's a lifespan to this bus terminal, and so we're going to need to put resources into that. I think in terms of other modes, we have not talked about here is PATH. I think there is a short-term opportunity to increase cross-Hudson capacity or increase the capacity of the PATH system by about 25% by spending $400 million, which is a relatively small sum when you're talking about billions, to expand the size of the platforms at a couple of points in Jersey City, the Grove Street station. By doing that, you'd be able to expand the trains from 8 cars to 10. In addition, we're in the process of finalizing the installation of automated train control, which will increase by another 20% the capacity, because we can run trains closer together. And as I mentioned before, I think there's a great role for ferries. But I don't disagree with the opportunities on the longer term for high-speed trains and rail investments. But, you know, the clock is ticking. One of these tunnels, or both, could fail. We need something in place before that happens. And we don't have the luxury of waiting 30 or 40 years to build a new network of trains. We need to increase capacity short term, and I think buses are going to have to play an important role in that.
Bergen Light Rail
as well. We're hoping that with the now that we've passed a gas tax in New Jersey, we will have the funding and a process in place for expanding the Hudson Bergen Light Rail system from North Bergen to Englewood, which I think will provide tremendous opportunities for residents in Bergen County to connect to rail and get into the city.
I think we've got time for one or two more questions. Yes, sir.
Hi. Good morning. Neil Weissman, the cycling advocate. Since I don't see any bicycles up there, I'm saying, for Mr. Lynn, you have the GWB, you have the ferries, you also have the potential of cross-peak travel on PATH or even near-peak travel to expand bike capacity. Since half of the trips to the Central Business District in London are going to be by bike in 2019, why is that? Why are bikes not in the picture?
Bikes are in the picture, as I think you know. When we did our 10-year capital plan, we got more comments from the public about bikes than any other topic, interestingly enough. And we responded. So one element of the project is the rehabilitation of the George Washington Bridge. And as part of that, we're investing in improved bicycle access. What we proposed did not satisfy initially the bicyclists who were testifying, and we've enhanced that by addressing a key bottleneck that I myself has experienced as a biker getting around the towers on the bridge. So bicycles are part of the picture.
Any other question over here, I think?
George Hikalis. When I first came to New York 53 years ago, or maybe a little before that, there was a plan to have a loop that would connect the stations in New Jersey with a new north-south tunnel in Manhattan. Manhattan's business district is long, longer than it is wide, and having a distributor that would serve seven or eight stations in New York rather than bringing more people to a single station. If there's a reset button, maybe one ought to take a look at the studies that were done in the past about that.
I appreciate your point. I would just counter with, let's deal with the urgency of the single point of failure. Again, phase one of Gateway, we need to replace the bridge and tunnel to replace, to put in some redundancy for that single point of failure. Larger, longer-term plans, I think we're all in favor of, but let's not forget the urgency of the phase one and what we need to do right now.
I think that is a perfect ending point for this panel. I want to thank our panelists.
Great job.
Thank you for your